Welcome to Headlines. This week we have a fascinating topic. Is Starbucks kosher? Starbucks, it serves more than a billion drinks a year in the United States. And all of us who are in the working world have passed by Starbucks. And when we travel, the question is, can we get a coffee there? So we have Rabbi Shalom Fishbein, the head of kashrus of the CRC, the largest Orthodox agency in the United States, regional agency in the United States. He's the head of kashrus. He's one of the most respected kashrus authorities in the world to discuss it. In the coming weeks, we have Rabbi Avram Tversky, Rabbi Doctor, the famous author, speaking about happy families. There's the divorce crisis, children at risk. He has written over 60 books, psychology, Musa, etc., to speak about happy family. I think that's just such a critical issue. The family is the center of our lives. The first mitzvah given to Klal Yisrael as a people, as a nation, is not, if you ask 9 out of 10 people, they'll say it's a chodesh hazalachem, but that's not incorrect. That was given to Bezdin. The first mitzvah given to Klal Yisrael is v'yukach alachem ish, celebes avo celebes, the family, the paschal meal, sit around with your family. It's the core of our identity, of Yiddishkeit, is the family. So he's going to speak about happy families. We will be having Rabbi Yair Hoffman speaking about priorities in tzedakah. Who do we give when there's the endless onslaught of knockers, of causes? How do we prioritize them? We have to prioritize tzedakah. It's just like we prioritize where to put our 401k plan, our investment. We will have Rabbi, the great leader of the Aguda, Rabbi David Zwiebel, speaking about school vouchers. Is it something we should be pro or anti? We have some surprising opinions. He will also be speaking about the Aguda's position on molestation. We will have Rabbi Chaim Jachtel be speaking about something that we may not be aware of, which is the Mamzerim crisis, which is a subset of the fact that 90% of our brethren here in this country are not Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs, and how to deal with this. We will also be having Rabbi David Cohen speaking about the Aguna crisis and a number of other topics. I would like to thank my Chabura at Beis Baruch here in Wesley Hills. They are my motivation. Every week to prepare the topic, I prepare a Chabura in Shul. It's an hour before Mincha. Anybody who's in Wesley Hills is invited. Beis Baruch is the corner of Grandview and Grand Park. It's an hour before Mincha, around an hour and 20 minutes before Shki every Shabbos, and that's when we actually go through all the halachas and we discuss, and it's quite vigorous argument on these topics. So I'd like to thank them because they actually helped me put this together. You can listen to us on WMCA 570. I believe we are the only halacha program on the air in the entire Western Hemisphere, or at WMCA.com or at NachumSiegel.com. If you have any questions, please send them to info@headlinesbook.com. Additionally, if there are any particular rabbanim or other authorities who you would like us to interview, send it to info@headlinesbook.com, or any topics you would like to discuss, because k'shem she'ein de'aseim partzufeim shavis, k'chein de'aseim shavis, and a topic that may be of interest to me may not be of interest to you. So give me your ideas. I love ideas. So let's begin our conversation tonight. Our next topic is going to be, is Starbucks kosher? Any of us who've traveled, or certainly who have teenagers, have come across a Starbucks. And the question is, can we have a coffee there? So we have with us the head of kashrus for the CRC. The CRC is the largest Chicago Rabbinical Council. It's the largest regional Orthodox organization in North America. And we've previously had the honor of having Rabbi Yonah Reis, their Av Bezdin, here on the show, and he spoke about prenuptials and the Aguna crisis. And today we have Rabbi Shalom Fishbein, who's the head of kashrus for the Chicago Rabbinical Council. Before that, he was with the OU. Welcome, Rabbi Fishbein.
Hello, thank you very much.
So, Rabbi Fishbein, before we start with Starbucks, let me pose a general question. Is there a problem of Bishul Akum with coffee?
Well, that's a great question, and the Pre-Chodesh actually talks about it. And the general consensus following the Pre-Chodesh is that coffee is nothing more than flavored water. And since water is not a problem of Bishul Akum because it's Nechol Chai, then it's no problem either. But although Rav Avi Yosef in his tshuvas does bring shitas to be machmer, and I think I've heard that some of the svarim that follow Rav Avi are machmer on coffee that should be bishul Yisrael.
Now, here's an interesting thing. I saw a chumrah from the Baal Shevet Levi, which he brings in Chelik Bey Simen Mem Dalad, where he says that instant coffee that we have today would be usser. And his logic is, he says, because the Chassam Sofer says that the reason to be mata coffee is, as you said, because there is no mamushis in it. And he says, since we see that you're actually putting in a heaping teaspoon of mamushis into water, therefore he says, in his opinion then, it would be bishul akum. What would you say to that? Because it seems to me that I'm not sure he had his facts right.
Uh-huh, interesting. I mean, it's you're basically flavoring your water. I mean, today it's very popular. They sell these little flavor packs where you just add in, cherry flavor, raspberry flavor, whatnot. And although coffee could be a little, you can make an argument, it's a little bit more than just another raspberry flavor. It really is the concept that the mayim is the ikkar, where the flavor and perhaps some caffeine adds to it. I didn't see the tshuva inside that you're referring to, but bishul akum usually is referring to the thing itself that is considered it's a chash of a meichel or something like that.
Well, here was my opinion when I saw it. As I said, if the Chassam Sofer and the Pri Chadash say that it's flavored water and it has no mamashes because the water just drips through the grinds. So my understanding it is, from what I've looked online, is that the way they make cafe namus, instant coffee, is they then take that the coffee that's dripped through the grinds, they remove the water through a process called freeze drying, and the resultant residue is what goes into the bottle as instant coffee. So right. It seems a little strange. On the coffee that came through the grinds, it would not be bishul akum. But then if you remove the water and reconstitute it, it would be bishul akum. Doesn't that seem a little strange? You would
right.
have two people drinking side by side from the same pot of coffee. One is drinking bishul akum and one is not drinking bishul akum would come out according to this opinion.
Well, I think what he's saying is somewhat of along the lines of achshave. There's when you actually do a kumvese and take coffee and add it to the water, then maybe it's a step up of I agree with you, by the way, but I'm just thinking out loud why perhaps Shev Levi would be machmer, maybe because you're it's like you're doing an added step. I do want to just jump in on something you said about the freeze dry. You are correct. That is how they do it. They basically make a concentrate and take the water out. But it's important to know, especially Pesach time, that there are two ways to make instant coffee. One is the freeze dried, which is the more chashev way. And then there's the way that most of our coffee is. The freeze dry is more expensive. Most of the coffee is that they actually just make it a slurry. It's not that they extract out the water from the coffee where then you're just left with a crystal. Now you got to reconstitute it, like you said. But they make a slurry of just it's coffee. They dry it and then they have to figure out a way to make clumps again, and that is a lot of the instant coffee on the market. And the way you can tell the difference between the freeze-dried and the regular instant coffee is if you hold it in your hand and you smash it in your hand, the freeze-dried won't fall apart and the regular instant coffee will fall apart. The nafka mina is for Pesach. Freeze-dried coffee for Pesach, not the decaf, that's a whole different story, how they extract the caffeine through alcohol sometimes. But the freeze-dry on Pesach really does not need a hechsher because it's just taking out the water and there's nothing to it. But regular instant coffee on Pesach, since they're adding things to regain the crystal so that it looks like a coffee crystal, they're adding maltodextrin and other things, then it does need to be kosher to Pesach. So just as a side note, I'm glad you brought that up. It's a good thing to know.
So you're saying that if somebody's stuck someplace Pesach where there is no coffee with the Hechsher, in that situation, they would be able to look for something that's freeze-dried and have an alternative.
That is correct. As I said, only that if it's not flavored or decaffeinated, but that is correct. And many times you'll find in the kosher stores where, you know, maybe an added sticker or whatnot, it's on freeze-dried, they're really not doing much. They're just they're going with this svara and putting on, you know, kosher lepesach. So
before we get to Starbucks, let me just one more thing that I think is important, one more minor discussion. Is there a problem of Marisayan about entering a restaurant or any enterprise that sells both kosher and non-kosher? Let's say somebody has a business lunch and they have to go to a restaurant that serves, well, they could have a vegetarian meal or a salad or a soda or a coffee, or they could have a meal there. How would you deal with the problem of Marisayan before we get to the actual food, actually just entering?
Right. I mean, as you know, it's brought down the Shulchan Aruch like that there is an issue of a coffee house. I think the consensus of the Poskim are that today the coffee houses are not like when Chazal brought it down the Shulchan Aruch, that, you know, if you walk by and you see somebody sitting and having a coffee in a coffee house or whatnot, the today's scenario or today's how it works is that most people do not think this person is eating or drinking treif. They're going out for a coffee. I think it would be a little different perhaps in a real restaurant, you know, where there's a lot of food and whatnot. But you know, it has been talked about in halacha, and the Paiskim have talked about it, and they felt that walking to a coffee store is no Marisayan.
What about somebody who had to go on a business lunch to a restaurant, even if they didn't have to eat? Have you dealt with this? As it's a little bit beyond maybe the purview of Mashgiach of Kashrus, but I'm curious if you had to ever dealt with this question.
Yeah,
which is very common, which is extremely common for people who are in, you know, in New York City, it's not an issue because there are so many, such a plethora of kosher restaurants. But outside of New York City, I mean, going to a business lunch is extremely common.
Yeah, I could tell you, I was in Spain visiting a plant, and Puerto Rico visiting a plant, and the person said, okay, you know, it's time for lunch, let's go for lunch. So I told him, well, you know, I keep kosher, I appreciate it. He says, you know, why are you being, what's the problem? The last rabbi that was here went with us for lunch. I said, you're kidding me. He says, no, I'm not kidding. He says, yeah. And I said, what did he eat? He says, I don't know. I couldn't believe it. I knew this previous mashgiach. I know this previous mashgiach, and I called him. And he said, no, I had my own sandwich. I pulled out my own sandwich. But by the time, you know, the person that was inviting me wasn't really there. He just knew that he went for lunch. They had set up a reservation for me, understanding that rabbis may go for a business lunch if need be, and not remembering or hearing about the last little detail that the guy pulled out his own sandwich. I would tell you, therefore, that each time needs to be asked a shiloh, the particular rub, especially if a person's job is in jeopardy. But it is it is much more serious than a coffee shop today.
Now it's interesting that in the Shulchan Aruch brings the Taz and Yeredei and Tzadik Aleph Beis actually brings a machlokes whether somebody's allowed to be nichnas into a pundik shulgayim to eat, and he you know brings the Marshal Paskins one way and the Taz Paskins the other way, and this sort of equivalent, you know, there's no clear outcome. But Reb Moshe in Igros Moshe in Chelik Beis Simin Mem comes out clearly that it would be Aser Al Tchshad, which is really very problematic for, in other words, somebody's on the highway, they have to stop to go to the bathroom, and there's a McDonald's there. Are they allowed to go in?
So I think the Paiskim, you know, and Reb Belsky speaks about it, and he does refer to Reb Moshe, that there's a nafkamina if the store is only selling non-kosher, or they also sell kosher, and that you know obviously takes care of the of the Maariv sign. So a McDonald's store, there's a lot to get. There's just last night someone was on the road, texted me, and he was getting a Coke. He basically wanted to know if he can use the ketchup there. but there's a lot to get on a rest stop somewhere out of McDonald's. It's not. I wouldn't consider that a Maariv sign. But you know, walking into an Applebee's store, that's very serious. That would be much more of a child.
I'm not a maven. What is the difference between an Applebee's and McDonald's as far as ketchup or Coke, et cetera?
I was using your example of McDonald's on the road. So okay. let me rephrase what I just said and use McDonald's to McDonald's. A McDonald's on the road would be less of a Maariv sign issue versus a freestanding McDonald's you'd go in off the street. That would be very serious versus on the road where, you know, you're online, you're just standing online and ordering a Coke, which is pretty visible. But walking out of a McDonald's in a bit with a bag, that's a Taco Maariv sign, even though there might just be a Coke inside.
Now, there's also another interesting, before we get on, by the way, we're speaking to Rabbi Shalom Fishbein, the head of Kashrus for the Chicago Rabbinical Council, formerly of the OU, certainly one of the premier experts on Kashrus in the world. His Hechsher is used by everybody. And we're speaking about eating out in both, you know, having to go to a restaurant if you have to for a business meeting, can you or can't you? But ultimately, our discussion is going to go to Starbucks. I wanted to, and we're on WMCA 570, it's our station stop, WMCA 570, the Zev Brenner Network. We are also on the Nachum Segal Network at nachumsegal.com. There is another discussion in the Paiskin before we get to Starbucks, one more issue about Maariv Ayin, and that is, does Maariv Ayin, is it written in stone, is it sort of immutable, or does Maariv Ayin change with the times? And for example, where do you see that? You see, let's say, Lagabi Peya Nachris, right, a Shetel. The Sfardim or Bavadya held that Maariv Ayin does not change. And many, many Sfardim, you know, won't wear a Shetel for that reason. Well, for that matter, Lagabi shaving, the only way it used to be able to be done was with a razor. But many Paiskim today, you know, believe that the concept of Maariv Ayin is a relative thing. What is the Maariv Ayin? The Shulchan Aruch HaRav in Sifches brings the Taz that says that, Maariv Ayin is sort of, it's flexible. And what do people think? And if the anhuga of a particular area is like people are going to a particular coffee shop, etc., and it's understood that this is why they're going for, even if in the times of Chazal it would have not been accepted, you know, it's just another interesting machloikis between, in this case, Sfardim and Ashkenazim, or I guess for Sfardim it could be more of a reason to be machmer about going into some place like a McDonald's.
Right. Well, you know, a great example to talk about, which talks to your point, is, let's say, Parv Creamer. The custom is that, you know, a par of milk, as you know, Shulchan Aruch talks about almond milk, you're supposed to put something, or fish blood, all those things that you need to put a simen. And indeed, you know, if you go to a wedding and they're using par of milk at the end, there should be a sign there that the milk here is par. But, you know, as time goes on, and now par of milk is so common, and it's brought down in the Machlek Brach on Yeridea. No one would think that you're really using real milk for coffee while eating a fleishig meal. You can see the Yichavadas, where they talk about this. So there's no need to place anymore a bottle of creamer on the table in order to let people think that it's parv. I think in the Rabbi Seif also talks about it, the Ber Moshe. So it's really, like you're saying, it's a time of the times. A mull, you would need to put it down because that the par of milk wasn't so popular. Today, it's so popular that really the metzias has changed and therefore the halacha has altered in order to understand the times. And now the chal par of milk has boomed. Even in Starbucks, where the only par of milk you used to be able to get was soy milk, now they're also offering coconut milk, which has gone mainstream. It happens to be OU, at least the places I've checked. In America, it's all OU. And I was in Korea last week, in South Korea, And I went into the couple Starbucks there to check it out. I did. They have a whole different way of eating and drinking there, but I could not find OU coconut milk there. So let's just say it's here in America. But again, it's becoming, power of milk is becoming not only mainstream in Jewish affairs, but throughout the world.
And I'll tell you that I ate, when I was a bachur, I ate a few times by Rosh Hashiva, and his wife often would serve dessert with whipped cream, and I never once remember her saying, and everybody should know here, we're bringing out the box, that the whipped cream is parv.
Uh-huh. Right. There you go. Very good.
So let's go to Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start at the beginning. You've established that there would not be a problem of bishul akum on the coffee, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you believe that there would not be an issue of maris ayin. Well, certainly there would be no issue of maris ayin if it's kosher, most of the foods there, right? So the question is, can somebody walk into Starbucks, and let's start, I know they make a myriad of the most, you know, a dazzling myriad of drinks, but let's start with the simple ones. Can you order a coffee at Starbucks?
Hmm. Well, that is the most commonly ordered, but not necessarily the simplest. You know, I want to first establish the word Starbucks, meaning we have determined that there are two types of Starbucks. There are the standalone stores that you walk into. That's the regular Starbucks. And then there's something what we call a kiosk. A kiosk is what you'll find many times on the road, like you referenced before, or in the airports, where they're actually not even owned by Starbucks, but they are somewhat of a franchise. And those kiosks are much simpler. And the most important nafkamina between the two is if they heat up hot tray food. So when you walk into a place, the first thing you want to determine, is this a kiosk or is it not a kiosk? And the way you ask is, do you have an oven here? Do you heat up food? And so in a kiosk, then you can certainly order a coffee and much, much more, because all of the shilas that come into Starbucks, which we'll get into, do not apply, because it's just the coffee, and the various non-certified things that they may wash in the sinks over there won't affect the coffee. But if you're talking about a regular Starbucks, where you there are heating up food, which, by the way, even I found that in the airports they were always kiosk status, and I'm starting to see. I did a quick walkthrough of O'Hare recently and other places where I have found that indeed the airport places are becoming like regular Starbucks stores, heating up food, using the dishwashers, the whole bit. So the kiosk is declining, and everything is becoming more and more of a regular store. So getting brewed coffee, well, it's a Shiloh. It's a Shiloh. Why? Because there's something called a brew basket. A brew basket is the basket that holds the coffee rinds, which the hot water runs through. And if that brew basket is washed together with the kaolin, that is the kaolin just had hot ham. So we're talking about isurei daraisa. This isn't the rabbanans here. These are isurei daraisa. That's mavliya. There's a shaila. We can talk in learning, and I can certainly give you a possible heter. The brew basket may it's mavli only kadei klipa.
Before even you go with kadei klipa, but there's a massive amount of water, right? So mm-hmm. even if there's blias, the blias would be batel b'shishim. They use soap. The soap would be nice and tam lefgam. I mean, when you add in batel b'shishim, nice and tam lefgam, how do you come to an isser?
Okay, so before we get into the nitty gritty, I think it's important just to establish a yesoid of how we approach Starbucks, and that is there are two. Most Yiddish people that are careful with what they eat Tzimtzum HaLev and all of that would never in a million years want to, certainly in their own homes, and b'chol want to digest anything that had Yisuri D'Oraisa on their particular or together with, you know, they want us away from Shilas. Many times the way I put it is what you drink at a Starbucks is somewhat of a litmus test of how careful or how concerned you are with Tzimtzum HaLev. So when you're talking to someone who's employed in the kashrus agency, the way we look at something is going to be different than a rav who's going to get a shaila by I had someone call here last week. She said, I have the coffee already in my hand. I just have a specific question about the whipped cream. She said, I'm not interested in if I could have gotten the coffee. I already have the coffee. I just need to know about the whipped cream. So, you know, as a rav, we can talk in shishim, we can talk in the klip, and all the things we're going to get into in a minute. But as a kashrus agency, it's our duty to tell people, these are l'chatchilos, and this you need a shtickel tire. It's like, you know, when you come to Pesach, let's say, for example, a toothpaste. It's, you know, a very common question. You can follow these books that, you know, this is good and that's good, and then you can buy something that actually has a hechsher. What's a nafkimino? One, you needed a couple of, svarim to be mater, and one didn't have a shiloh at all. There are people today that just don't want to have anything with a shiloh. We're not in Europe and in other parts of the world where it's much harder to get kosher. So in a chinami, you have to look at each one and understand the needs of the people and make an assumption. Listen, you know, listen, not the chatchila, but, you know, we hold that the evidence at least it's good. So all the things we're going to go through now are going to be b'dieved. There are many, many people. And when they find out, and I've had this many, many times, when a person that's so machmer, what they, the b'chol, their whole life, on Torah mitzvahs, and they really, really want to be a keli that can be kabbal kedusha, and they find out that they've been drinking something because the rav or whomever told them, yeah, but it was based on the teirim and all types of things, they get very upset. I'm not looking. I'm not a b'dieved d'kayid. So I think that's important to say. Mamela, just to conclude on this part.
Rabbi Fishkin, but can I interrupt? Because I honestly, it's a topic I'm not so familiar with. If somebody, let's say, if something was batal b'shishim, right, mm-hmm. Is there any more timtum than something that is not batal b'shishim? Is there any makar for that in Chazal or in Rishayim or Achrayim?
So that's a big machlokes. If a Talmud Chacham says, I know there's isser in there, but it was batal for whatever reasons, and I'm not going to drink it if he's not b'kairos or not. There is a big machlokes. If you learn your that, I don't remember offhand.
No, but is there a question of timtum alev on something with his bittel?
Right, no, that's the machlokes.
That could be just al tzchumra. You know, you have a Talmud Chacham but won't eat from something shahay rabbi. But right. I don't know if that's al timtum or a chumra ba'alma.
Right.
Is there a question of timtum where there's bittel b'shishim?
L'chayr or not, and if Chazal say that it's, I mean, shishim, as you know, is not a magic number. Shishim is that it's no longer considered a
nice
no longer
and tam.
Right, nice and tam. It's not a. If it's nice and time, if you still taste it, you know it's shishim.
So I'm saying, so if it's not a nice and time, is there any din of
right.
Timtum?
L'chayr or not, if Chazal say that one could eat it, Chazal would say not. But we have to establish if you have shishim and all that here. We know that, I mean, there is no nice, over here we're talking about blias, which Chazal say tam kiyikr. So, and there are blias here, and you don't necessarily have shishim, and we have to get into this a little bit more. But I think, you know, that's all I was trying to give the point across. I remember I once spoke in Lakewood. I was astounded. I was really astounded. If there's one place in the world that I thought they would, they wouldn't be looking for. Yeah, I found two things in life that you don't mess with people. One is their bourbon, and one is their coffee. The other is their coffee. I was astounded how passionate people were arguing why they should be able to buy Frappuccino, Dizzle, you know, whatever the fancy stuff over there is. And these are people that learn Torah all day. I wasn't ready for that. Maybe other places that I would have argued the points could have been slightly different. But, there's Yisurei D'Oraisa, and let me say one other very important thing. Starbucks has become a restaurant. Over the last 2 years, they have introduced so many more Yisurei D'Oraisa hot. It's not like when I originally started looking into this, whatever it is, 7-8 years ago, when I was doing some serious research back then, it was much simpler. There's a couple of items, and then your point of maybe there's shishim and next time of gum would have been more relevant today. Everyone, I based on my own research and the baristas who I speak to, some of them are Shomer Shabbos, so I get very good inside information. It's mamash become a restaurant. They're pushing much more towards foods and afternoon foods and morning foods, and they're trying to become more of a place because coffee is a morning thing, and what are they going to do the rest of the day? So they're being innovative and they're basically turning it into a restaurant. So there is much more to contend with in Yisurei D'Oraisa than Amo.
This was most educational. Thank you very, very much. And as somebody who's used your Hechsherim for many years, I want to thank you, not only on behalf of the listeners, but on behalf of my family as well. Thank you very much,
okay,
Rabbi Fishbein.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So this week in the parasha, we speak about the Meraglim, the story of the spies. Now, to many of us, this is a story that happened 3,500 years ago. So it's an old story, and, sometimes we may wonder, I guess there's a lesson there, but why are we telling stories from 3,500 years ago, and how does that affect my life today? And in fact, as somebody who lives in the working world, I'm frequently asked by people like, it's so much tradition, Orthodox Jewry, it's surrounded by like riot and tradition. A few weeks ago, I was asked to speak at the Pidyon HaBen, and it was an irreligious person making the Pidyon HaBen, and I was the only Orthodox person, so he said, David, would you say a few words and maybe explain it? And there were around 50 hedge fund managers there. And I was Nesoyer, because I had spoken just a little bit before that, a few weeks before that, at a different Pidyon HaBen, and I said a vart that I thought was very moving. So this is in a hotel in Manhattan, and a very fancy hotel, and they bring in a rabbi, and he says, he asks the father of the little boy, he says, Ma bois tfei, bincha becherecha chamisha slaim, what do you prefer, what would you prefer? Would you prefer your son, or the 5 silver coins? You can't have both. Do you want to redeem him with 5 silver coins, or would you prefer your son? So I asked the crowd there, I said, isn't this an absurd question? Your son, your newborn son, beautiful little baby, or 5 coins, what do you prefer? I said, if it was a teenager, we would all grapple, many of us would grapple with the answer. But with the beautiful little baby, I said, it's clearly, like, it seems like an absurd question. And a very prominent hedge fund manager in the crowd said, of course it's an absurd question, because all of these traditions are absurd. To which he got a nice, chuckle from the crowd. So I said, so let me tell you a story. Let me share a story with you. This hedge fund manager, in fact, I looked at the guy. I said, I think he may have even worked for you. Comes home one night. It's 9 o'clock at night. And he runs upstairs to tuck in his little boy, who's falling asleep, his 7-year-old son, and the kid's falling asleep, and he says, good night, his son, he says. So the little boy opens his eyes, looks at him, and he thinks for me. He says, Dad, how much do you make an hour? So this guy thinks, and he says, I make $500 an hour. So the little boy thinks for a minute, and he says, Dad, would you lend me $497.75? So the father says, and $97.75. What does a 7-year-old boy need that type of money for? No. I work. I take care of you. Me and Mom, we take care of you and your brother. Go to sleep. Gives him a little kiss. He puts him into bed. He goes downstairs. He's eating dinner. And he says, my son is stinking. He's such a good boy. I don't spend that much time with him. I don't see him. He never asks me for anything. And guilt starts, Jewish guilt. We all know what that is. Starts setting in, like, heavy. And his food starts not tasting so good. And then it sets in with real steroids. We know, he hears his mother in the background. What's with you? In his head. So he runs upstairs. He wakes up his son. And he says, here, he takes his checkbook out. Here's a check for $497.75. The little boy takes it, and he says, "Oh, thanks, Dad." He gets up. He goes to his drawer. He comes back with a little plastic bag, a little sandwich bag that we put our sandwiches in. And in it, there's quarters. And he says, "Dad, here's $2.25. With your check, that's $500. Could I buy an hour of your time tomorrow? Would you come home early and play with me?" So I turned to the hedge fund managers and I said, "So how many of us, when the Kohen, the priest, asks us, what do you prefer more, the money or the child?" And we all laugh uproariously and we say, "Of course the child." But then we spend the rest of our lives saying, no, I really meant the money. So I said, our traditions have deep and poignant meaning that are very relevant and contemporary. And the whole crowd started clapping. Interesting, they weren't religious, but they started to appreciate. So what is the story of the spies, of the Meraglim, that's relevant to us? So what's the story? They're about to enter the land, the promised land of Eretz Yisrael, of Israel. And Moshe sends 12 spies to reconnoiter, to check out the land. And they're, they go there, and it doesn't really go very well. And what is the message for us? And I have another question. Every morning, if you're Orthodox, you make a blessing, Motzi Asirim, God who releases the imprisoned. Now, I guess we all know somebody who's in jail someplace, or we've heard of somebody, but isn't it a little bit who releases the imprisoned? I mean, of all things, too, who releases the bound? Like, who do you know in jail? I mean, is this so important that every morning we have to thank God for letting out those who are in jail, who releases the imprisoned? So let's go back to the story of the Meraglim, and the Ramban asks a question. He says, they were punished, the entire generation was punished, that they would not enter the promised land and they would die before they entered. He says, what did they do wrong? They said the truth. They went there, they were spies, they did a military, a reconnoiter, they examined, and they came back and they said, it's indomitable, it's insurmountable, we don't think realistically we can do it. So were they punished for telling the truth? And there's no reason to believe that they were lying. They really believed what they were saying. It's just not, it's Lainucha, we cannot. You sent us for a purpose. Should we come back and and just tell you what you want to hear? That's bad, right? I mean, so the Ramban says they were punished because they said Lainucha. Right? And let me try, we can't. And let me try to give you a little bit of how that's relevant. I think that each one of us, each and every one of us listening, every one of you, it has a promised land. And what does that mean? Well, you could have a promised land. Maybe there's something financially that you aspire to. Is it a new home? Is it a mortgage? Is it a new job? Is it something socially? Maybe socially friends. Maybe you're not accepted. Maybe family. Maybe you would like to have a better family situation. Maybe it's a shidduch. Maybe spiritually you're not doing so well. Maybe it's in health. Do you have somebody in your family who's struggling with health and you're trying to get them into the proper doctor, etc.? Maybe it's weight loss. It's those extra 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, or 100 pounds you have to lose. They say that obesity in America is going to be the number one killer. It probably is already the number one killer, right? So, and it's that indomitable. It's that diet that's just insurmountable. We just can't seem to pass a donut store, and it just talks to us, right? We all have some promised land. There's something that we aspire to. What happens? We want to get there. We want the job. And who come? The spies come. And what are the spies? You know, as people, we're very vulnerable. And what does vulnerable mean? If somebody tells to me, says, you know, David, you know, you just look terrible today, or you did a lousy job, or your shear was terrible, your program was terrible, or, oh my goodness, that deal you did. We're vulnerable people. That's what we are, right? We were, after the Chet of Adam Arishin, we became very vulnerable to what the Rambam learned. We became very vulnerable to social criticism, etc. So we have some mountain we aspire to, some hill we want to get to. So we send out the spies. Oh, who are the spies? The spies are our reason, experience, our ego, our intellect. And they say, you know, that job, you know what? You're just not smart enough. You don't have the right skill set. It's too hard for you. You can't work hard enough. I mean, you have like a lazy streak. You know, you can't sing, you can't dance, you can't, whatever the you can't is, right? Those and therefore, go back into wherever you are comfortable. Like there's this old shoe, wherever we are, that's comfortable, as unhappy as it may be, right? That rut, that, you know, that gloomy rut. But it's like, you know, people stuck in just like this job. They just, somebody told me, he said, my father hates where he davens, where he prays. I said, so why? He says, you know, he's a person. He sat down in shul, and the guy next to him is horrible. I said, so why doesn't he change seats? You know, he sat down there, and he's been sitting there for 25 years, because once he sits in a seat, he just can't move anymore. Sounds absurd, doesn't it? But I'll tell you something. We all get stuck in ruts on some level. You know, let me tell you, and you know, we believe that rut becomes a reality. We can't even see out of it. I'll tell you, they say a story that there was this doctor. He had a friend, a very dear friend, who started drinking. Some people, you know, fall into their ruts, and they, you know, they become addicts of one type or another. So he was drinking, and his starting to develop cirrhosis, and, you know, alcoholism could really lead to terrible diseases. So he decides to try to show his friend how bad it is. So he calls his friend in, and he says, listen, he says, Todd, listen, I want to show you something. He takes out two glasses of water. A glass of water, and the other glass he fills up with bourbon. Really good, you know, Maker's Mark, or I don't know, you know, Kentucky, whatever bourbon, pick your favorite bourbon. I personally don't drink bourbon. And then he takes out two worms, and he puts a worm in the water, and, you know, and the worm in the water is floating around and swimming, you know, doing the breaststroke, the backstroke, etc. Then he takes another worm, and he puts it in the bourbon. And it takes two drinks, and it falls dead right to the bottom of the glass. So he looks at his friend, and he says, so what do you see? His friend looks at him, and he says, I see that if I drink bourbon, I won't get worms. So when we fall into ruts, I mean, we fall in, and we start to believe it's a reality. You know, my father, Zichron Lebracha, used to tell me an amazing story. He said that in Barnum and Bailey Circus, but more so in Thailand, you know, in the Far East, they used to use elephants for you know, schlepping things, for carrying big packages. It was before they had, you know, Mack trucks, and before everybody had 4x4s that, you know, the sizes of, you know, expeditions that can, you know, basically pull a small house. So he says, what did they use? They used elephants. He says, now what do you do? How do you stop an elephant? An elephant can weigh 10,000 pounds or 12,000 pounds, 6 tons, and now you want it to stop it. Like, and have you ever been on an elephant? I've ridden an elephant in Africa. Its skin is so thick, right? You could like bang a nail into it and it won't feel. You know, if you want it to stop, you could, you know, they give you this pointy thing. You could, if you, it's not a certain area where you hit it, it doesn't feel anything. How do you stop an elephant? An elephant could be dangerous, right? So this is how they teach the elephants to stop. When the elephant is born, they put around its leg a chain with a ball and chain, and the ball weighs 20 pounds. And the elephant at that point, when he's born, weighs 30 pounds. The elephant gains 5 pounds a day. And it can't lift its leg. So what it does, when it wants it, it walks. It wants it to stop, it puts the chain around its leg. The elephant tries to move and it can't. So what happens? So after the elephant, when the elephant is an infant, it knows the chain means it cannot move its leg. It learned that it's helpless when the chain is on. And every time they want it to stop, from when it's an infant till it's 6 tons, they put the chain on, the elephant stop. The elephant has learned that when the chain is around its leg, it cannot move its leg anymore. Even though when it's 6 tons, with one flick, it could send that ball flying like a missile, right? In its mind, it has learned that this action means I cannot. And I'll give you a funny story. Have you ever, you could be in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, and your 50s, and one day you see your first grade teacher in the supermarket, and you look at him and you're like, with fear suddenly. Hello? He's earning $20,000 a year. He's a first grade teacher who knows the ABC. But when you were little, you knew that this guy was the king, was the boss. And that's sort of like a little bit of a metaphor to the elephant. So we all have that in us. Psychologists call it learned helplessness. There was a guy, he used to come to the circus with a fabulous trick. He would take a glass box, and it was full of birds. And he would say, you see, they're all flying around in here. And then he would remove the top, and none of the birds would fly out. Because the birds, after banging their heads into the glass, time in and time out again, understood, they cannot fly more than 10 feet off the bottom of the box, and that's it. And they never try it again. And that's us. That's what Al Miraglim tell us. And, you know, you see it in almost every endeavor. I'll tell you, in sports, there was a famous gentleman. His name was Roger Bannister. I don't know who've heard of him. There were movies made about him. He was the first one to break the 4-minute mile. In thousands of years, nobody had ever run a mile in 4 minutes before. Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile. He was the first person. He was flown around the world. He was feted by kings and prime ministers. In the next 20 years, 500 people broke the 4-minute mile. Because he showed it's doable. And once he broke that learned helplessness, that glass ceiling, it was done. It was no big deal anymore. So you see people and they say, you know, I have a temper. My father had a temper. My grandfather, you know, I'm Irish. We've generations of temper. I'm Scottish. I'm a drunk. My father was a drunk. My father had a weight problem. My grandfather had a weight problem. My sister has a weight problem. I have a weight problem. We see this in all areas of life. And what does that mean? Those are the spies. So what happens? There's something I aspire to that you, there's something you want. And what happens? Your ego says it's impossible. You'll get embarrassed. Your pride says, oh no, what will your friend say? Your experience, that's the smart part of you, says, it's risky. Your seichel, your reason, says, nah, it's pointless. But you know what? There's only two voices in you. Everybody deep down in their heart knows that they were created to be more than a bird in a cage. So your heart says, give it a try. And something even deeper says, you know, you have faith. You're a maimon. You were created for something bigger than what you're doing today. You were created to grow. If we're not growing, if we're not moving up, we're not really living. We're not expanding. So only two of the spies, two of the miraglim, protested and broke out of the mold. And who are they? Yehoshua. And what does Yehoshua stand for? Ka Hashiacha Me'atzas Miraglim. He had faith. And Yehoshua, right, comes from Shevet Yosef. And what do we find with Yosef? Yosef was the ultimate prisoner. But what did Yosef have? Continually, multiple times, 6 times we have Yosef says, Eselikim Ani Yarei. I believe in Hashem. I am a man of faith. I was created here for a reason. I have a mission. I am not was not created to be a bird trapped in a cage. And who was the other one? Was Kalev. And what does Kalev mean? What, he comes from Yehuda. What is Kalev? He was totally heart. He was all heart. He was all passion. His heart. He listened to what his heart said. And who does he come from? He comes from Shevet Yehuda. And what do we know about Shevet Yehuda? What do we know about the Melech? Right? The line of kingdom. What does it say? It says, Layarba Leinashim, right? V'layasar Levavai. And what does the Rambam say? Alibo Hikpida Taira. Ki Libay Levav Kol Yisrael. The heart of the king is the passion of the entire people, is the heart of the entire people. So Kalev, totally heart. Two Shvatim said, your pride says you can't, your ego says you can't, experience says you can't, reason says you can't. Kalev, your heart says you can, your faith says you can. And here's the story of the Meraglim. Who will you listen to? Tisha B'Av, the Gemara says, was the day of the Chet HaMeraglim. That's the day of all failure. It's the metaphor of all failure. When Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked, why don't we make a Yom HaZikaron for the Holocaust? He said, oh, we have a day of Zikaron for the Holocaust. It's Tisha B'Av. So Tisha B'Av represents all of failure by Kfal Yisrael. All the I can't, Lo Nuchal. That was the day of the Meraglim. Whereas the opposite, the day of Pesach always falls out the opposite day of Tisha B'Av. Whenever the night of the Seder is, it's the same day of the week of the Tisha B'Av. And what was the story of Pesach? What does Pesach mean? To leap. What does it mean to leap? To jump out past that glass roof. To say, all my faculties are saying I shouldn't, but my heart says I should. And my faith says I was created to be something greater than the box that I'm in. I was created to grow. So this is the choice that the Meraglim present to us today. Will we listen to those in me and you? That, and I'm not talking the outsiders. I'm talking about the voices in your own head that say, I can't, Tisha B'Av. Or will I say, I will jump, I will leap, I will try. We're on 570 a.m., we're on the Zev Brenner Network. We're on the Nachum Siegel Network. And we're talking about the Chet HaMeraglim and how it's relevant to us today. So let me continue this thought. When we make the bracha every day, what do we say? We say, Motzi Asirim. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Motzi Asirim. He takes us out of prison. So I ask you, are you in prison? Do you know anybody in prison? I personally don't know anybody. Oh, I do know one person in prison. But, you know, out of the thousands and thousands of people I know, you certainly wouldn't think that it's worthy enough to say, why do we make a bracha on this every day? And I put to you, because you are in prison and I are in prison. There is something that we are in prison about. Again, it could be socially, it could be family, it could be economically, it could be health-wise, it could be our weight, it could be a relationship with a child, a relationship with a wife, relationship with a parent, with a sibling. There is something where we say, I just can't go there. It's too painful. I can't fix it. I don't have the strength in me. I'm not talented enough. I'm not smart enough. I can't break out. I'm too comfortable where I am. And that's what we make the bracha, Maitzi Asirim. We don't believe. You know, I heard a most amazing story. There's a fellow, Dr. Cooper, recounted it. And he was a cancer physician for children. And he recounted the following story. He said, you know, I have a cancer practice in a hospital. And this boy came to me. And he was somewhat like a sickly. He had a serious type of lymphoma that was just very frightening. And at the time, it was not very curable. And he came to me. And as he was leaving, another boy came in, a big strapping boy. And I turned around to my nurse. And I started talking to her. Now, the boy, the sickly boy, had brought coats and muffs because it was the winter. You know, it was chilly outside. And being that he was in a disabilitated state, He was in a sickly, a palsied state. He had brought extra clothing. So he came back into the room unexpectedly, and I was telling my nurse, I said, this boy about will make it. He has a good attitude. I believe he has the strength, etc. Years later, Dr. Cooper met this child, and he had grown up to be an adult. It was at an affair where he was being honored. And this boy came over to him, and he said, you know, Dr. Cooper, I wanted to thank you. Because when I came back into the room, and you were saying that I have the strength in me, and I have the courage and the wherewithal, and I'll make it, I left the room, and I told my mom on the way home, I didn't think I could do it. But the doctor said that I could. And this doctor must know what he's talking about. So I redoubled my effort, and I tried, and I'm here today, and it's years later. And Dr. Cooper said, I wasn't talking about that boy. I didn't think he was going to make it. I was talking about the new boy who had come in, who was strapping, who was healthier, and had a much more mild case. But he believed, and he believed, and he became. And that is, if you say Leinuchal, it is Leinuchal. It's really a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that is the choice that is given to every one of us. All right. So every day we have the choice. When we say Maitzi Asir, and what is it a prayer for? What are we davening for? Break me. Give me the courage to break my mold. That when my pride says it's impossible, when my experience says it's risky, when reason says it's pointless, give me the courage to say, follow my heart and follow my emunah betachin, follow my faith, follow Kalei Venya Yeshua and not the Miraglim. It's very relevant in every part of your life, my life, today. So, next week we will be discussing happy families. We will also be speaking about, we will have Rabbi Avraham Twersky, Rabbi Doctor, the famous author. I've been reading him for many, many years. I've enjoyed his books tremendously, over 60 books. We will also be having Rabbi Yair Hoffman talk about priorities in tzedakah. We will have Rabbi Chaim David Zwiebel, the brilliant leader of the Aguda, to speak about school vouchers and various other Aguda topics. I look forward to seeing you next week. We're on WMCA 570, WMCA.com, thenachumsiegel.com. If you have any topics you'd like us to discuss in the next week, send them to us at info@headlinesbook.com. Thank you for listening to us. All the best.